views of politics. But this is being taken now as part of this program to encourage people to sell off their birthright. Now, I would say that in this time of judgment, and we are in the time of judgment, anyone who sells out their birthright sells out the Christ and goes with the atheistic elements of this world at this time. It could be a sad day indeed when they find out how long they have been and how they have sold out their birthright. It would be a very sad day. I have seen these things happening. The nation's capital has been pointed out to me that right now Central Intelligence has more suicides than any government agency in existence. And I would say that the reason there for this is the same as is what is happening in other government agencies, where there is a program underway to put section chiefs, department heads, and various ones who are in charge of people, appoint these people as much as possible and slip into these positions, atheistic ones who say there's no God and there's no Christ, put them in charge. Anyone who says that they believe in prayer, believe in spiritual things, is being pushed out, either by suicide, by resignation, or by the route of a mental hospital with a government psychiatrist signing the papers, sending them right from their job to the mental hospital. This is happening in the nation's capital. This is also something that is happening throughout this nation, in state capitals, and even in the county government organizations. But there is a terrible fight going on within government agencies. It is all around. We are in the Armageddon right now. Right now, it is a battle of minds, a battle for the control of the minds of the people of this time. Whether a man is going to be free, is going to have a right to reach for the highest things and the godly things, or whether he is going to be a mental walking robot and going to take his orders and smile always at the right time and pay his taxes and keep up his credit system and everything else, doing this very agreeably because he has become a walking robot. This is the struggle. I know what the outcome of this is going to be because in the last part of this lecture tonight I'm going to tell to you things that I have been told this year in 1960 in a very profound and spiritual experience. And I have been told to tell the people of this time what is ahead of us. We are not going to be faced with a defeat, we're going to be faced with a victory. But this victory will be brought about by those who still know the higher things and the higher truths. It's not going to be something very easy, but it can be done. And the victory is assured because God is still in charge of his universe. He has never relinquished control to any atheist or anyone who would try to push his fellow man down. He has never lost control. He has always maintained control. These people who think that they're gaining now great power, all that they are fooled by is their own ego. They are looking at their own ego and their own demonstration of things that are indeed an abomination upon the face of this earth. Narcotics, crime, violence, viciousness, lack of love in the heart, judging and criticizing, all of these things. And they say, look at how powerful we are. All they are looking at is a manifestation of the negative qualities and their own ego. The greater powers have never lost control of the universe, and they are not going to. Not now. Out of this situation, we're going to see something wonderful evolve. And it's not going to be, as some have thought, a great and materialist society controlled by a few people. It's not going to be that at all. It's going to be a manifestation of the Christ consciousness where people live with his love in their hearts, practicing it every day in everything they do. Those who can survive through the time ahead of us, and this includes the coming of these spaceships, they are all a part of this. They know what this program is. They are a part of the fulfillment of the prophecies. They are here partly and greatly because a promise was made by one who came to the earth. Because of one who came to the earth on an assignment, upon a mission, known as the Lord Jesus Christ, made certain promises. The promises that he made was that a kingdom of heaven would be established upon the earth. The old world, the old earth would disappear as a new heaven. A new earth and a new heaven would appear. To me, the meaning of this is that we are going gradually into higher consciousness, or into what you might call a fourth dimensional awareness, even to the point where we can see things that we cannot see now. And as we gradually, by the higher vibratory frequency of the earth and our own development, acquire this greater understanding, we will indeed see a new heaven and a new earth, because we will be looking at it you might say, in a different scope. That those who survive these things that are ahead of us, and whose motives are right, who dedicate themselves in service to God and their fellow man, they will be the new generation. They will be the fathers and the mothers and the children of a new age. That will begin by the year 1980. That he, when questioned by the disciples about various things, they asked, for instance, in one case, they said, "Will your words, will your teachings be accepted by the world?" And they were very much concerned because they were also going to go out and teach this to the world. As it turned out, by the historical reports, it is indicated that none of the disciples survived except perhaps one, who was taken up. All the rest either died by crucifixion or by stoning or imprisonment, even as Jesus was crucified. But he answered them this question in these words. He said, "It matters not whether the people accept my teaching, but I say unto you, the world will be judged by my words in the last days." And this judging by these words means, by my interpretation, that we are living and practicing these things. And as it is said in that scripture, that the words are written in our hearts. That means that we practice the principle of love and understanding in our hearts, in all we do in relation to our fellow man. And until we have acquired that, we have not yet accepted the great consciousness that was brought to us. They always wanted to know when Jesus always spoke about a future time as being the fulfillment of this. He made a definite promise, and it was to be fulfilled. But the scriptures, everything was stopped at that point because it could not be fulfilled at that time. The world was not ready for it. It would not receive it. Another important statement, I would say that the guide for all of the things that are happening around us and to us today can be found in the New Testament teaching. There is a complete guide and principle there for us to follow. That where it is said that the stone which the builder rejected would become the head of the corner in this time, a very prophetic and very important statement. The scribes and the Pharisees, the Sanhedrin of that time, who considered this teacher a great, terribly dangerous man, because the people were following him. They wouldn't have worried about it if he was some crackpot that no one listened to. But he had changed the money changers out of the temple. They already had lost money on this situation. They had been selling sacrifices, lambs, doves, all sorts of things to be sacrificed to placate so-called angry God, to keep on the good side of them. And he had chased the money changers out of the temple. The people were listening to him and following all around. This is a dangerous situation. So they called him into various questionings, trying to find out something they could use against him. They were just like a court of our time, that they would call a person in for questioning, not because they didn't know what he was doing, but to try to get him to say something that could be used against him, to put him into jail or get rid of him, because he might be dangerous to this time. So he was to be trapped in this way, that they would try to get him to say things that would put him into a bad light with the people. But he outsmarted them. He knew even what their thoughts were before they even spoke the words. So he said to them that the girls down in the red light district down here will reach the kingdom of heaven before you do, because you are hypocrites. Very straight words indeed, aren't they? Because you are hypocrites. And he said that where it is said in the scriptures that the stone which the builders rejected will become the head of the corner, that indeed this will happen as a fulfillment of these things. Now I would say that the stone which the builders rejected was Christ's teaching and principle. It is a part, perhaps, of the pyramid symbology where the capstone has been left off. In some of the faith reports and books, it is indicated that this capstone will actually be installed in the pyramid in the fulfillment of this time. But it will be done by stations, not by earth machines or crawler tractors climbing up there trying to put that stone into place, the capstone. But the acceptance of the Christ truth and teachings by the people of this time will be the stone which the builders rejected. It will be the head of the corner. We are actually in these work and activities, whether you fully realize it yet or not, are actually laying the foundation for this principle to happen, to be activated and become a part of our world consciousness. It has never been accepted yet, but it will be before this cycle is over. We are living in the last days of a cycle of years that I would say has run 26,000 years. This has been indicated to me in such ways that I feel definitely this is so. And that many have served upon the earth, some even coming here from other planets, have served upon the earth a 26,000 year cycle to try to uplift the consciousness of our people over a period of years. Some may have been here 300,000 years or longer. Many on the earth have originated from other planets. We will find in the final understanding that there have been colonies planted upon the earth long, long ago in the long distance past from earlier planets where civilization did flourish. And that there may have been an evolutionary line also developing on the earth at the same time. But it may be that many of the people now living on the earth have an interplanetary origin. And this will be eventually understood and comprehended. That the universe is not an empty universe, it is a system of planets that has been intelligently organized and has supported intelligent life for who knows how long. Most of the astronomers now are accepting and saying that they believe that there are hundreds of millions of inhabited planets, and undoubtedly many of them are more advanced than our own. If we allow our ego to stand in the way and say to us, well, geez, we're so powerful, we're so mighty, well, look what we have. We have built cars, airplanes, we even have atomic bombs now, and guided missiles, and nuclear warheads. We are advancing very rapidly, and we are a civilized people. I think one of the quickest ways to displace any ego of that nature, it might be called a truth statement by some people, but sometimes by a little story like this, some things are brought out that might save hours of lecturing. This is a story about the cannibals on this earth. We look down on the lowly cannibal and say that he is indeed lowly evolved because he kills his own kind and eats the flesh. We send missionaries out to convert them to a higher and better way. And sometimes the missionaries put in the pot also and becomes the soup of the stew. I saw a cartoon one time that was quite interesting where one of these missionaries was about to be put in that huge iron kettle and the water was beginning to steam. And the missionary turned sort of desperately to the cannibal chief and said, says, I thought you had done away with these things. And the chief said, well, to tell you the truth, is we had done away with it, but the cost of living got too high and we had to go back to it again. So this is a problem faced by some of our cannibals. But in this story, we look down on the lowly cannibal and say they are lowly evolved because they kill their own kind and eat the flesh. But you know, once in a while, and quite often, has been quite often, we declare a war, we make it legal to kill our own kind, and we go out and kill millions of our people, and we waste all that good meat. Now, if the cannibal were to go out and see that battlefield, if he were to see that battlefield, he would look and say, what a terrible violence, what a terrible destruction. I could have lived for thousands of years upon this chaos. Isn't it true? Who are we to say that we are civilized when we have not learned yet to live in a civilized way? We in this world have not learned and have not been living what we call civilization. Right now, various scientists, various leaders in our own nation have been proposing, and we understand from the press that the Russians have been proposing the same thing. Some have proposed that we fight a preventive war. We end wars, we have heard about wars to end wars. We declare war so that we can end wars and have no more wars. Isn't that a war also? And then some have proposed that we fight a preventive war to end wars so that the other party can come and make war against us. Isn't that a war also? Doesn't that start the conflict? Doesn't that start it? Can we hope in just one strike to end any kind of opposition? And down through the ages, every time that the so-called enemy has been destroyed, another one has risen up. Always everyone seems to have enemies to fight. Where did they come from? It shows that the whole principle is wrong. That man, and the only time he will ever live by peace, is by establishing the Christ principle in our hearts and living it. And as some have said, there's a New Age song out to the effect now that let there be peace on earth and let it begin with me. Let it begin with me. If we take the violence out of ourselves and start there, then we can perhaps extend this lack of violence to other people. We are engaged in a very dangerous struggle in this time, and I would say that we need to turn to divine guidance completely in order to safeguard this nation. that various forces and pressures are working against us internally within our own nation and from outside the borders of this nation, that should the bastion of freedom be destroyed on this free world, everything else will fall. And I would say that from the confusion ahead of us, the only way that we can be sustained is by divine guidance. The very principle that Wernher von Braun has spoken of in our space program, where he has said in a talk to a Women's Forum on National Security in Washington, D.C., he said that our last ventures into space have produced new evidence which indicates again the divine order of all creation. And he said it should naturally enhance our reverence. He was fearful lest in our space exploration attempts we, the Earth nations, should try to conquer the universe, taking our wars out into space. And he said that in our whole space growth program, we need to work by divine guidance. This from a very profound scientist, and I think he's a very wonderful and courageous man to come out with the truth of that statement. We should have this blasted against us in the front pages of all of our newspapers. As it was, I was able to get it from a little clipping. Most of you have never heard about this statement, I'm sure. How many of you have you heard this statement made by Wernher von Braun? This is something that should be known to all the world, coming from our foremost space scientists. So I would say that the indications are all around us as to what the signs of the times are. We need to examine our space attempts, everything, as to what our intention is. Are we going to go out to the moon, to Mars and Venus, and take off gold claims and haul gold back and put it down in Fort Knox underwater there, the way our gold is stored now? Are we going to partition off various parts of the universe and say to other nations, keep off here, this is ours? And others do the same thing, even as we're sort of partitioning off the South Polar region, or beginning to argue about who's going to have control of certain areas out there. The whole universe always has been and always will belong to the one creator, the one source, the one power. Man merely has an opportunity to use and utilize these things, if you will use them in destructive ways. When he proves his narrow-mindedness and his ignorance, then he drops out of the picture. One man has said, one of our thinkers, workers of this time, he says, you know, says, I'm not sure that man is capable of controlling or living on this earth, proving his right to survive. He notices that there are other forms of life that may not be as advanced as we are, but how can we say that the spiders wouldn't do a better job than we have done? That they can build bridges, they can fly in the sky, they can do fantastic things. Maybe the spiders would be able to do a better job than people have done. We have something to examine in all these things. Have we done the right things in the right way, in the highest principle, or are we capable now of turning and doing more of these right things? The answers are available to us. We will find them within our own hearts, within our own consciousness. We will find that there is a Father within, even as Jesus spoke of. He said, it is not I, but the Father within that doeth work. Harvard University has recently discovered and announced that they have discovered a superconscious mind existing in man. Various schools and teachers have for years been teaching about the superconscious, the conscious, and the subconscious mind. Now, Harvard says that it exists. So they are making progress at Harvard, too. But we need to step ahead, every one of us, and work with the highest mind, the highest principles that we know, and dedicate our lives in such a way that we can be proud examples for the higher order, which is being instilled upon the earth. It will come. There will be survivors, and there will be the ones who have turned the right way. Now, thank you very much for your interest and your attention. I'll turn the... There are no announcements to be made. Are you having any announcements, please? No announcements to make. I might tell about some of the books that I have on display, some of the photographs that are here. I'm carrying with me handling a book called Urantia, which tells about an order of the universe, systems of planets, universe and super universes, things of that sort in nature. Many of you may want to look at that book. It's available for order. Also a book called The Pentagon Case that tells about the conspiracy behind the scenes, where one of our former Navy flyers, who was working in the Pentagon as a top-level speechwriter for the Defense Department official, discovered this very conspiracy within the Pentagon, and then reveals in this book even more of it, how various communist writers are now writing some of our public school textbooks
used in our public schools, how they have infiltrated the movie industry, and many other things, and how he tried to call for an investigation and expose this conspiracy, and he was run out of the Pentagon. Attempts were made on his life right in the Pentagon parking lot, and a program was underway to put him in a mental institution under official sanction. This involved even a United States senator who was trying to get his brother to sign commitment papers against him without even seeing his brother. All of this failed because these people did not fall for this. But he was eventually forced out of the Pentagon, where they had first claimed that he was insane, there was something wrong with him, he needed a rest. He was wise enough to go to the Senate Internal Security Subcommittee and reveal the whole story to them. They told him to go back and advise them about his actions and that everything that happened would be reported to them, to put them on notice. There was consternation now where they had been a conspiracy to put him out of commission. It was very quiet for a few days, and then he found himself working in the Pentagon with no work on his desk. They sent him no work whatsoever. He was what you might call in isolation, right in the Pentagon. No work, still drawing his salary. A rather ridiculous position. No work to do. And finally they began to tell him, he said, well, you might as well resign. He says, you know, you can't do anything more here now. And they offered to give him even a recommendation for another job if he would voluntarily just resign and move on out. He realized that he was at a stalemate anyway. He might as well resign. So he left there, and they gave him a recommendation proving that their first accusations had been false in the first place. He went to work in private industry at a high-level salary, proving that there's nothing wrong with his mind, and finally wrote this book, The Pentagon Case. He had challenged one of these people since that time in the New York City papers, who he says was right behind this program, who was a hidden man behind the scenes, who was instrumental in getting him pushed out rather than investigate his reports. And he says in the public newspaper release in New York City that this man was and is Secretary Gates, who is now the top man in our Defense Department. He was at that time Undersecretary of the Navy. Many of us have been wondering, there's a lot of questions going around in the minds of many people, exactly what happened to Secretary of the Navy Forrestal. What happened to many people who were patriotic Americans who have suddenly disappeared from the national scene? We'll find that we can put a lot of answers together if we look in the right places. Another book which I'm carrying with me, which is available for order, that's called Mental Telepathy, a sort of layman's textbook proving that telepathic communication mind-to-mind, is possible. Our most advanced colleges and universities are saying that they have proved electronically, by electronic instrumentation, that they can record a brainwave going out from the mind that does not diminish with distance. I feel that we will have adequate proof that communication is real, has been, and is. There is a great deal of evidence to support it. Well, thank you very much, and we'll see you then after about a 10-minute break. Please, now in our second phase of tonight's program, I want to get into more specific things about the corollary between the coming of the spacecraft and the biblical prophecies and the fulfillment of these prophecies within the next 20-year period. You'll begin to understand as we go on more and more that I not only believe in mental telepathy, but actually practice it. These things, to stand for something or make claims about something, don't mean very much unless you can do something about it. And the things that I'm relating and telling about generally in these lectures, even though I don't go into all the details, if I told you about everything that happened in the Mojave Desert experience, it would be about a 2.5-hour lecture. And that's not my subject material tonight. But I try to sort of hit on some of the highlights to help people understand that there's something going on and people are involved. It concerns people on this earth. It concerns our civilization. That's why these ships are here. They're not here to look at our icebergs and then go back or take movies of some of our landscape and scenery or some of our traffic jams in our cities. It's far more than that. They have known of these things. Any advanced civilization, I don't care where it is, that has developed electronic and technical means can tune in and know what's going on in planets without going through all of that confusion to try to find out what is going on here. That they can monitor our television programs and our radio signals and things of that nature. They know what we're saying over the airwaves. They have known of our wars. They have known of everything that goes on the face of the earth. But they have known about the earth and they have known about the people here even before we became aware of our present civilization, of the last 5,000 years period in history, for instance. They have the whole picture, not just one phase of a civilization. They have the reports and the knowledge of what happened in the Greek times, in Egyptian times, what happened before. Was there an Atlantis or Lemuria? They will know, and they have it in their records. Because they have, unlike the earth, they have not lost their records. We have had a great deal of chaos and confusion upon this earth. We see all the evidence in our mountain slopes, in our mountain ranges, in various places where land has risen and fallen, been above the sea and below the sea. We see all sorts of chaotic things indicating an instantaneous, almost chaotic condition, where tropical animals that live in tropical climates have been found frozen in Siberian wasteland, for instance, piled up in masses of confusion. And they have found that in those areas, that some of these tropical animals still had some of the tropical vegetation within their mouths. They hadn't even swallowed it, and there they froze. What has happened? It means chaotic conditions. Velikovsky, Emmanuel Velikovsky, brings out many of these things in his book called Worlds in Collision, Earth in Upheaval. And he has written a new book now on the on the Greek period of history, bringing in all of the folklore and the mythology of that time. We're beginning to understand more and more that much of that mythology is again, related to this outer space activity, that the names of the Greeks supplied the various gods were what you might call space beings, related to interplanetary visitation. Every time that man has been contacted by more superior intelligences than people, he tends to worship that which comes to bring him many higher understandings. The American Indians, in their reports that have come down from generation to generation, tell about the white gods who came down from the sky in flying canoes. They didn't call them flying saucers, the crazy name that we originated in 1947. They called them flying canoes, comparing them to what they had that was a method of transportation, a canoe going on the water. So they became flying canoes. What's more simple? So we come up with flying saucers. And that these white gods from the sky landed and brought them corn and showed them how to grow. And if they did not come along anymore, they did not come so often after the white man came. Down through the ages, these contacts have been made. Various beings have been contacted. The experience of Ezekiel, where he describes a wheel within a wheel. And he says that a likeness, like of a human, spoke to him from within this craft. And when he heard this voice calling his name, he fell on his face on the ground. That's always been the natural tendency of people when they see something advanced, something they can't understand, they think it's supernatural or something, and boom, they fall on their face in the mud or sand or whatever. And this voice commanded him, Ezekiel, stand on your feet, stand up. So he stood up. And then he was given instruction about certain things, how a certain city was in such a point of low moral degradation that if they did not change, the city would be destroyed. So eventually he was taken up and was taken on a certain hill where he was even tied in a position so he could not move and get away from there. And he was told to pray continually, day and night, over that city. Extraterrestrial visitation again. Advanced beings who knew the state and condition of the people of that time and have known it through countless eons of time. Because it is quite possible that they have originated much of our civilization in the first place. Brought colonies, established colonies on this earth. And they have been watching the development of it. Unfortunately, man apparently went down into a state of lower vibratory activity, lower consciousness, became materialist, known as a Luciferian rebellion in the heavens that involved some 200 planets and more, as reported in this book called Urantia, which was a rebellion of materialism, where a man began to say that there is no God. There is no superior intelligence. Even gravity is just what you call some kind of a natural something. They couldn't explain it, but they said it's just a natural, and there's a science behind it and so forth. We understood we could explain it. Even as many of our scientists, some of our Air Force people, different ones have been saying that these flying saucers aren't real, and that you don't need to worry about them, that can't explain this last sighting yet. It was on radar or it wasn't on radar. But we feel sure that after a reasonable time, we will have a logical answer to it. That's no answer. That's evading the whole issue.
I don't care whether it's one in a million that can that they can't explain. It still means that there's something going on in the sky that indicates that there's more than what man has comprehended upon the earth. The golden men of Lot, the ones who spoke to Lot and told him to take his family and get out of the city that was about to be destroyed in the case of Sodom and Gomorrah. All of these things relate incidents that are concerned with things that are going on the earth right today, because I was shown in my experience that our civilization is on the very edge of a precipice, and that only the spiritually motivated people can guide our civilization through the difficult times ahead. Only those with right intentions and right motives. As a result of this experience, it was such a shaking to me internally in every way. 2 weeks after this experience, I had to be on my way to Washington, D.C., where I personally called on every senator and congressman asking for open public hearings. I've been interviewed by a Central Intelligence Agency, and I have been working continually since the year 1967 in this field. Working without salary, not concerned about salary, I have traveled over 200,000 miles in this work. And apparently there'll be many more miles added to the speedometer or to the aircraft flights before this is over. But this is a work that comes to a person when you know that something has to be done. And if you can't go around and tell someone else to do it, what good would it do if I went to my neighbors or to George or Sam and said, "Say, as you ought to go out and do something here," and so forth, that our world is in great danger. The only way you can establish an example is by starting it yourself. If you do that, then you have established a precedent. You can tell George, you do something also. It is very important. And the situation is very critical. We must, by our own example, by our own choice, by our own actions, indicate that we are trying to do something to help. When we do that, then we are given greater power. We are given help if we prove our sincerity and make a constructive approach. In these various incidents that I have seen across the nation, I have seen the craft many times. I have been traveling down the highways, and sometimes a flare has been fired over the car. My wife and I have both seen them. We have stopped, and there is no plane in the sky, and still the flare would go over the car, kicking off sparks. Sometimes these flares were greenish, sometimes gold-colored, sometimes blue-green, various colors. But where there was no reason for anything to be in the sky, then it was quite close to the ground. It was not up high that you could confuse them for a meteorite. These were close to the ground and going in a parallel path of the automobile. I have seen so many of these things happen that it is out of this world. But again, I'm not interested in any phenomena situation. These would merely give me heart, and perhaps I'd be tired. And I would say, well, I'll try to do my best. I'll keep on going. So this has been the practice that I have followed. In these various biblical experiences, we know of countless ones through the Bible. I've been saying that the Holy Bible is possibly the best flying saucer book in the world, because it is full of these spacecraft sightings from cover to cover, but people never read it that way. For instance, in Kings 2, it was pointed out to me just yesterday morning, right in this house. From Kings 2, the statement about planets. One person had challenged someone else that they would look into this subject if they could find the word planet even mentioned one time in the Holy Bible. So this person had made a search, and they showed me the scripture here just a couple of days ago. In 2 Kings, chapters 23 and 24, I think it is, there is a statement in the 4th and 5th verse, and I typed that out. I have a copy of it that I'm going to use from time to time. The word planet is mentioned, but it is brought out in this way, that this certain king of Judah of that time had rediscovered a book of law within the temple, the holy temple, and this had shown what the tribe of Judah should practice in the way of worship. What was the abomination in the sight of God? What was idol worship? And all of these things were outlined, what they should not worship. And indicated here was that they did not worship the sun or the moon or the planets, nor the host of heaven. And the same host of heaven is visiting the earth right today. They are visiting the earth. They are the extraterrestrials. They are visiting us. They have been visiting this earth for countless thousands of years. But they come not to be worshipped.
They come to be helped, to be of help. And they want to be loved. They want to be understood. They don't want to be worshipped. So an abomination would be to worship these things. Man has down to the ages always fallen on his face. And in some of these various communications, various teachers, out of Giant Walk, for instance, one person brought out in one of the lectures that whenever a man sees something that's more advanced than he is, that he falls on his face and his bottoms off. And he says, they don't want to see us bottoms up. They'd rather talk to us face to face and have us act like men and women than fall on the ground with our bottoms up. What good can you do talking to a bottom? They want us face to face and act like people. In an experience in England, this was recounted by Desmond Leslie in a book that he co-authored with George Adamski. He brings out that in one of the earlier sightings, earlier reports, this is a report from England, where they were having a wedding ceremony. And someone shouted during his wedding ceremony, they happened to be outside, they saw one of these crafts going over, a circular full of crafts. And he shouted, and everyone ran outside. And when they saw this craft, they all fell on the ground. Again, bottomed up. And someone said, this is a terrible situation. This is the bridegroom or somebody is gravely in error. This is an omen. And this couple cannot be married. I would see there's something to celebrate when you can have a visitation from an extraterrestrial craft. But they always called it an omen. And they were fearful. They thought that they'd have to be, they would even go maybe and give human sacrifice or animal sacrifice, thinking that God was angry with them. Because here was the omen in the sky. But in Oklahoma City, I've heard a report of people who are living today that were children in an earlier time. This is in the early 1900s in Oklahoma City, where a huge cigar-shaped craft came over that city. And the children were playing in the yard, and they all saw this craft. They were all watching it. Their father was a minister, and he came rushing home from church. And he spoke to his wife. They called the children inside the house, and they all went down on their knees in prayer. And they would not let the children or anyone go outside of that house until that craft had disappeared and taken off. They were all on their knees praying to God for to be saved and so forth. Because there was a terrible omen in the sky, something they couldn't understand. A cigar-shaped extraterrestrial craft that was observing and knew what was going on. So until a man arrived at the point where he could understand such greater things, there was not much use in trying to contact him. Now we have jet planes. We're firing rockets off into space. We have spent over $30 billion on a rocket program, and our most advanced scientists, starting with Nikola Tesla, Professor Hermann Oberst, and various ones have said for countless years that man, when he does go into space, will not go into space with rockets and missiles. He will go in electrical spaceships. And Nikola Tesla pointed out way back in the 1930s, he says, don't waste your time on anything else. Concentrate on electrical energy, electrical spaceships that will travel between planets using the power that is found throughout the universe, which is electricity. A very profound scientist who was not much understood in his time. He proved the principle of being able to transmit electrical energy without wires. And some people would say, well, gee, that's wonderful. If we could do that, why have we built all these millions of miles of electrical cables and conduits up in the air and through the trees and underground and everywhere else? And the answer is that Nikola Tesla demonstrated this principle to a group of financiers way back in that time. He proved that you could light an electric light bulb miles away from the generator. And they looked at him and they looked at it and said, how in the world can we make any money off of this? Everyone could tap in. So the project died right then and there. We have spent millions and billions of dollars on everything else because it can now be needed off and can be sold. This, they thought, would be a low control situation. And who could tap? Everyone could tap in. So world science, world technology is set back many times. Because man can only understand dollars and cents. He only measures his progress sometimes by how much money he can make from it. If he can't make the money, he says, oh, we just can't have this kind of progress. This would be terrible. This would change everything. So people like Nikola Tesla could not do as much as they would have liked to do. There are reports that he had 1,150 inventions or more that he tried to present to the world. And the world only knows of some 80 of those today. Among the more simple things that were actually introduced and are in practice. that usually our greatest men are not recognized until they die. This is another pattern now through the history. That we look at those people's lives, we look at them and say, well, gee, they talk over our heads. Nikola Tesla would call in a group of newsmen every time that he had a birthday, and he would tell them some new invention, some new thing, and they would laugh at him. They would ridicule him, the newsmen. He had pointed out about cosmic rays way back in the 1800s, and he predicted television about seeing a picture right in your living room on a television screen. He predicted radio and all these things and told how it would work. And they laughed at him. Even after some of these things began to manifest, they still laughed at him. Because the ones he spoke about now were even more true. And he told about spaceships and things like that. There are reports from a newsman who was actually living, who I met and knew and talked with in Washington, D.C., who was an international correspondent. And he said he was present in one of the Tesla demonstrations when a dirigible-type craft in a huge barn on Long Island was moved from hither beyond and back again from a control on the ground, just from a little box. There were no connecting wires. He said, now we'll make it go that way. He made it go that way, and he said, now we'll bring it back again. And they don't know how in the world it was done, but there it was. Some kind of a free energy principle, but the world has not accepted it. You know that now, since Tesla has been gone since about 1943, that in the city of Chicago, for instance, now, one of his haunts, at that time, he used it on New York City and Long Island. But in Chicago, they have dedicated a scientific school and library to Nikola Tesla. Now, he's been gone long enough, now it's safe enough to dedicate things for him. Now, he's a great man, a great man. But down through the ages, we have seen this thing happen. The case of, in England, for instance, this holds true in all nations and all peoples. We persecute, we destroy, we crucify people because they come up with a new idea. We think that if we can eliminate that person, we can forget about the idea. But it never works that way. The idea stays, even when that person might be eliminated from the physical plane. In the case of Faraday, he was trying to conduct electrical experiments in school laboratories while he taught school pupils. He caused such an uproar by these experiments that he was called clear into the British Parliament, just a school teacher, to come up and explain to them why he was spending tax money to carry on these foolish experiments, trying to build what he called a motor. And his answer to these people was that, well, the answer, gentlemen, is that someday, that when this is built, he says, you will tax it. You will tax it. So that when they thought about it from a tax angle, they said, why, go ahead. That sounds good. We will tax it. And they did tax it. It's being taxed today all over the world. The electrical water is being taxed. But our most profound scientists, our most profound thinkers down through the ages have been pushed into all kinds of corners and have been ridiculed and everything else because they came up with a new idea. This evident in the life of Columbus also, where he realized from a review of history that a full generation passed before the people of that time would accept that the world was round, even after it had been proven so. And understand that we still have a flat earth society. I thought about joining that society just for fun. But these things are real. They're around us all the time. That is the problem of our people, that we are failing to open our minds and examine things in the right light. Dan Fry, in the front part of this book, The White Sands Incident, a book which, if you haven't read, I certainly recommend that you read it, where in the words of this Allen, who is a man whom he communicated with and was involved in this experience that was not of a terrestrial nature, this man said that there should be a fundus book in every book of philosophy on the face of the earth. And these are the words that he quotes. It is easier to ridicule than to investigate, but not as profitable. This is something for everyone to examine. If we would laugh and ridicule something, then we find out later on that we were indeed bad facts, because we laughed at something that could have elevated our consciousness had we examined the true facts. So down through the ages, man has pushed down, he has ridiculed. People of an earlier time in Boston, for instance, in Salem, Massachusetts, in various parts of the world, were proving what we are talking about now again, that there are such things as communication, is known through all through the Holy Bible. Apostle Paul and various ones spoke about it. He says, test the spirits and find out if they are God. People hear voices. So now when a psychiatrist hears of someone who hears voices, send him to the hospital. Lock him up. Put him away. If we had some psychiatrists who would understand that these things are real and try to help people out to understand what is happening to them and have them test these things to find out if they are God or if they are something of a negative quality, a lower evolved form that is trying to destroy them or affect their minds or take them over, then they could maybe help those people. But what do? They start giving them shots and drugs and shock treatment and say, boy, we got to really work on this guy fast. He's in bad shape. But in Salem, Massachusetts, they burned people claiming this was witchcraft. Burned them for witchcraft. So now, after a considerable time has passed, the witchcraft trials have been reviewed now in our modern time. We're now civilized to that point. And the reverse, the outcome, the decisions made in these cases have been reversed, and they have been all granted a full pardon. If they were still walking the face of the earth, they could have a clean bill of health and a decree. They were pardoned. The problem that we're faced with then is trying to comprehend all of these things in the light of higher consciousness, in the light of extraterrestrial life that is spoken of in the Bible, life on the planet. We will begin to find that there are origins on age that's originated from outer space. And that many of these people are coming back. They have been coming back and are coming back to review again what is going on the earth, to try to help this civilization evolve. What else, what better way would there be to help a civilization evolve than to put some more advanced people out there as a sort of a seed and let these grow up along with the civilization? You know that down through the ages, that if man ever saw something different, that we're just like a bunch of ants. You know what ants do if you put a strange ant in their anthill? They all jump out on him and destroy him. Man has done the same thing. Anything that looks different, anyone that can do more things, can communicate telepathically, was called a witch. Anyone that could hear voices, that's witchcraft. Any man that invented something or had greater powers of discernment, they were dangerous. They could look in your minds. They might even read your thoughts. And that's very bad. Destroy them. So since man has been like these ant colonies, that they would destroy anything that's different from them, I would say that the only way that people could be helped to evolve out of their low state, out of the warfare and their lower state of development, is to put people among those people who grew up with them. They're now earth people also, made of the same flesh and bones. And called earth people, and they look the same, and they act the same, they go around here and there talking and doing things. But something happens in the lives of many people, and they begin to realize that there's a greater life, a higher life, and they begin to lift the whole civilization with them. The Emersons, the Alfred Lord Tennysons. What is in the books of Shakespeare? Who wrote Shakespeare? Who were these minds who had greater and more profound ideas? You'll find that Emerson and many of those people knew about extraterrestrial life and began to realize these things. Many of our writers, our authors, what caused Whitman to do the things he did? What do our composers do when they develop a beautiful symphony, the like of which was never heard on the earth? Now, many of them have said, their friends and various ones in inner circles, they have said that we heard this music. And we merely recorded a note of what we heard, this beautiful symphony that they heard. Wouldn't that be good enough reason to lock them up in an institution? Lock up all the composers. They're all crazy. Lock them up. But they brought something profound and something helpful to mankind. And we have accepted it as good. But some people would have claimed that as in that person as an individual and said, well, he's a great man. He wrote this thing and he has done a beautiful job. We give them personal claim. Jesus said, it is not I, but the Father within that doeth the work. Along with this line, I want to read you something that I believe that we'll come to understand in a profound and significant way. Various ones upon the earth have been claiming even to be certain groups of people, certain denominations, certain races and types and all this and that and so forth, not understanding a greater significance. That there has been changes in people. People have moved along the face of the earth. There have been great migrations and movements. and there has been a great confusion in tongues and languages. These extraterrestrials know what has happened in our race situations. They know the background. They know what has happened. I'd like to read you something that I definitely believe will eventually be fully understood, which will erase much of the confusion of our time as to who certain people are and what some of these things are. Israel is an interplanetary group of great courage and devotion. The line of David of Israel is the most courageous of all, and what a glorious chapter they have written. The blood of Judah is a pure work of God. They are true sons of God, and a glorious blood it is. When we examine these things, these claims, these things that are being done upon the face of the earth, we have find all sorts of arguments for persons making certain claims, to having certain race lines and all this and that and so forth. When we begin to examine the 12 tribes of Israel, for instance, in the light of interplanetary visitation, and that these tribes may have been brought here from interplanetary space originally, and that they were the chosen people because they chose to come to the earth to help this civilization evolve, and that down through the ages they have tried to do something, and out of that group of people were one that were called Judah, and apparently had a special line, a special courage involved. We know by the history, the example of David and Goliath and various things, that they indeed had great courage. And they have been working throughout this world. Many are saying, and we may comprehend, that there is a different situation, that the new Israel of the world of today, right now, is America, and may include Canada, the North American continent, the new Israel of this time. And that America is being given a role to play in this time. Most of the spacecraft landings and sightings have been in the United States. Most of the visitation reports, most of the books have been written in America. Others in Brazil and a few other countries, but most of them here. What is the reason for this? You'll find that the reason is to wake people up in this country so that they can carry out a role, an assignment, a mission. And that is to bring to the world a higher understanding, a better way of living. And it can be done by America as a focal point, a bastion of freedom of the free world. Even though we are attacked, we feel will, I believe, be sustained in these critical times ahead of us. I would like to tell you at this time about this experience that I have mentioned just briefly. I have had many experiences with these craft. I have seen them many times. I know that communication is real. And I have seen the evidence of it many, many times. But in this experience of February the 14th, it was something that was profoundly more than anything that had ever happened before. In this case, in this experience, I awakened in the early morning hours on February the 14th, which happens to be Valentine's Day. When I awakened, I found that I was in a state of ecstasy from the top of my head to the bottom of my feet. I had never felt this before. And as I awakened, I said, what in the world is happening? This is a wonderful feeling, but what is the reason for this? Now I have come to understand and comprehend that there is a higher-minded man that we can use of what we call our intuitive senses, that we have what we call a still, small voice within that tells us things, gives us answers if we will ask. That our reasoning mind that many people use all the time, and they think that that's the only mind they have, that they reason and they reason and they reason, and they think that the last day's mistakes, the mistakes of yesterday, were caused because they reasoned wrong. But now, since they have learned so much since yesterday, they can reason better. And they'll reason again today and find out tomorrow that today's answers also were wrong. But the reasoning mind works like an IBM machine, that you put certain problems into the machine by pushing buttons. You put certain information in the machine, and lights flash and wheels turn, various things. A process is completed that comes out on the other end in a ticker tape or a typewriter, a certain answer is given. Now, some people would say that by their reasoning mind, whatever conclusion they came up with was correct because they did all the right processes. They reasoned and they got an answer. Now, how many people have ever thought that the problem that was put into the machine might have been wrong in the first place? Why is it that in our colleges and universities we are continually throwing away the old books and writing new ones? Old concepts are falling, new ones are presented. how right, how more right are our new concepts than our old ones. Because we are always throwing away the new concepts also. We learn something more and we throw the books away. Why don't they stand? Because much of the material put into the reasoning mind in that pattern was wrong in the first place. Therefore, the answer was also wrong. That our reasoning mind has a valuable contribution to give us. It can reason and it finds use, but it can only reason about certain things. It cannot tell you the truth or the falsity necessarily of a situation unless we have the exact right information put into the machine. People are reasoning, our world has reasoned for thousands of years, and we are still making mistakes. And we are still going to make this mistake unless we base what the reasoning mind works on by higher consciousness, by higher intelligence that comes from the creative mind, or what may be called the superconscious God mind in man. When we have right information, then our reasoning mind can do something with it. But as long as we go around in that old circle and say there's no other mind rather than our ego or our reasoning mind, that we have not arrived even at the right approach. We just go around in a big circle continually. So I asked in this case, what in the world was happening? This is what my intuitive mind said was happening. You are where you are, but you are somewhere else at the same time. At the somewhere else, there was a gathering of people, and I could sense these people in this gathering. I began to hear music within my temples. It was not in my ears, but right in this part of my head, which is a part of the higher thought processes that have to do with the pineal and the pituitary gland, and the higher mind of man. I heard music within this part of my head. It was something like a banjo, but it was not a banjo. I have not heard anything like that on the face of this earth. As each note was struck, I began to realize, I realized that I had knew what each note was going to be before I actually heard the note. And I thought to myself, I know this song, I have heard this music before. It was something that reverberated all through my system. I could sort of feel it all through my body. It had a profound effect. The name of a person was spoken who is renowned upon the earth as a great singer, known throughout the world. And I feel that this person was present at this gathering, perhaps adding to the musical accompaniment or the musical program at this time. This was a spiritual occasion. There were many what you call spiritual persons present. It might have been on one of these spaceships. It might not have been. But I had a feeling that it was like in the upper ethers of the world. It was not on the earth. It was like in the higher ethers. As these things registered, then I had this feeling. I had a sensation, the feeling of someone approaching me. And as this person approached me, I had the feeling within inside of who this person was. I know from the Far Eastern teachings, I've studied and read about such things as the seven chakras within the human body, the spiritual centers, the seven major centers in the body. I think the biblical comparison to this is the seven churches of Asia, comparing or relating to the same thing. That in my heart or soul center, one of these centers, I heard had the identification of who this person was. I could feel this person, the identity. And when it is said that the Christ is within, I certainly can say that this is true, because I felt it on this occasion. Then this person addressed me. These were not things that I heard in my ears. Again, it was words that were presented or given in my temples in here. They are more clear, were more clear to me than my spoken word is to you, because I also had feelings at the same time. A feeling about the situation. I sat up in bed and wrote everything down, not even bothering to turn the light on. I was in a hurry to get this recorded. I recommend that everyone who gets interested in these things, that they begin to carry or have a pad and pencil beside their bed, because these things happen best when you are in a state of relaxation, just when you wake up in the morning, and you're sort of between that wakefulness and sleep, that you are in a state of relaxation. And these things begin to manifest sometimes. You begin to understand that there is something going on. Someone is trying to tell you something. So you feel something from a higher plane. But I was wide awake. I sat up in bed and wrote everything down. And all the words were given to me very clearly, in a very clear fashion. I wrote every word down. The first thing that was said was the identity of the person spirit speaking. This is what was said as identification. The Lord Jesus Christ, Son of God, Lord of all creation, Son of love. I feel from this and that this person that we know upon the earth as the Lord Jesus Christ has authority all through the universe. That the word Lord generally means angelic being or a spiritual principle. And he has authority all through the universe, all through the creation. The next thing that was said was 1960 is a year of the sign of the Star of David. This Star of David is referred in symbolical meanings in the Pyramid of Giza, the Great Pyramid, and in Holy Scriptures as a six-pointed star. I feel that the general meaning here is that in 1960 we're going to have many signs and wonders given to mankind. That it is a year that it might be considered a focal point, a year of great principle. And that this year of the sign of Star of David generally means that we are living in the year of the Christ sign right now. The year of the Christ sign. That individuals or groups may make great spiritual growth and progression if they will apply themselves. Depending upon what we do this year in 1960, many things in the future may hinge. We have great chaotic times, a great difficulty upon the face of this earth, or it might be eased off depending on what man does. Does he continue to be stiff-necked and hard-headed? Does he continue to be egotistical in everything he does and thinks and in his actions? These are all criteria involved here.